Accession number 21098 to Rule 4.
Harold Wilms, Hurst Reel 4.
On another occasion, we were lying out in no man's land. And this aircraft was shooting its gun off. And we were told not to fire back because they were trying to find out our position. So we didn't fire back. But there was a PU, a vehicle, not far from us. And they saw this vehicle from the aircraft. And they dropped a huge bomb. And it landed not far from us. And all the debris flew over the top of us. All the debris, the ground and everything flew over the top of us. And we didn't get hit. It was a huge explosion. That was when the tanks were leaguered up not far away. They were trying to find out where they were. That's why we were told not to fire. You could hear the aircraft circling round, you see above us. And I believe there was a night fighter about as well, because we heard a night fighter firing. And whether they got the German plane or not, we don't know. But that was another example. Well, we sent a patrol out one night to try and find out where the Germans were. And we had sticky bombs, what we call sticky bombs. They had a casing on them. You had to take the casing off to stick them on a tank or whatever. And they used to rattle as you were moving across the desert. Kept quiet if we could, you know. Any little noise sounded, you see. And the air patrol got near the enemy lines. And they saw a chap crouching down in the desert, you see. He was doing his business. They captured him. An air company commander reported back to the RAF. And they bombed that position that night. They were all in communication at that particular time. They bombed that spot. They took the prisoner back and interrogated him. They got some useful information from him. They captured him with his treasures down. Quite often happened in the desert.
What else do you remember?
Got back to our original positions eventually. And from there, we marched further inland. We had a huge dust storm. We were stuck for 5 days. Couldn't move. Terrific dust storm. The sand, the dust got everywhere. There's no vehicle movement as such because you got lost in it, you see. I shall never forget it. Our brigade had been split up. And their battalion was on its own for a time. Then they decided to make a slurried infantry. For a breakthrough in the great battle at El Alamein itself. So we were called the 133 Lorried Infantry Brigade. We joined the 10th Armoured Corps near the coast. And once the battle was proceeding, it was their job to break through. The Germans, once the Germans were in retreat, we got to break through. On the 23rd of October 1942, El Alamein begun. We didn't go in on the first night. The Scottish Division, 51st Highland Division, went in with several other divisions, and we were in reserve that particular night. But we got to go in on the 27th of October into action. They cleared a minefield and laid tapes as guidelines for us to go through. And as we went through, we saw some of the 51st Highland Division. We went through them. They said, "You're lucky." They said, "There's nothing there now." And there was nothing there at a certain time tonight. I said, "You're lucky. We went to take these positions, you see." Well, we got so far, and all hell let loose. They started shooting. We went in with bayonets fixed and shooting from the hip. And I was in Platoon HQ, 14 Platoon HQ at that time. I was told to report to Battalion HQ, because one of the battalion runners was missing. Someone had failed to find him. So I went to Company HQ from Platoon HQ, and as I say, all hell broke loose. They started with machine guns. We went to ground, and of course the mortars started coming over. My platoon HQ was practically wiped out. Having moved to Company HQ, I'd escaped. I stayed with the Company HQ and the Sergeant Major. And we eventually reached this anti-tank gun with the Germans hiding behind it. Well, we dealt with them.
How was that?
Rifle and bayonet, and we dealt with them. We wounded one German that was behind the shield, and he could still speak. He was all right, but he begged and prayed of us not to kill him. And the Sergeant Major looked at me and said, "Stay here," he said. There was a machine gun nest on their left, was holding up one of our platoons, 15 platoon. Machine gun nest means a nest with several machine guns firing all round, you see. So 15 platoon were held up. A carrier officer came up with a carrier with digging tools aboard, and picked shovels to dig in, you see. And he tried to rally the troops on their left to attack this machine gun nest. Well, We saw them firing from the hip. They went in with guns firing, machine guns, Bren guns rather, and they were firing from the hip. And just before they went in, this officer, we were issued with grenades, 36 grenades, was preparing to throw one of these grenades in the direction of this machine gun nest, and he got shot through the shoulder. A chap named Brogdon and myself patched him up as best we could with our first aid bandages, which we had. And then there was a single shot and he died. We laid beside this huge tank that was out of action, probably a German. It was dark at night, just moonlight. We couldn't see what it was. And then this corporal Vers turned up with this German panzer grenadier. And he said to my sergeant major, he said, "Can Wilmser take us out? Because this German prisoner had given himself up, and the corporal had been shot up. His arm was shattered with bullets." He said, "Can Wilmser take us out?" He said, "I can't look after this prisoner," he said, "and, you know, go myself." So sergeant major says, "All right." He said, "Take him back to battalion HQ where the carriers were." So I went with this chap. I got a Tommy gun, which was jammed. The dust had got in the Tommy gun, and it was jammed. And the German had been disarmed, I know, but I had to take him back to battalion HQ. So we laid in two slit trenches. There was a big tank battle going on. The shrapnel and hot solid shot was flying everywhere, and we had to lay low in this trench. I reported to the battalion HQ, and they said, "Have to wait for a brigade to come and pick the prisoner up." So we laid there, and eventually brigade headquarters sent two or three men to pick him up. They took him off. And just after they'd taken him, battalion HQ had a direct hit. Two carriers were blown up, and the men killed. We saw them carried on stretchers to a first aid post, but you could see they were goners. And the commander, company commander, said, "Report back to your unit." So I looked at him, I said, "I should never get back in this battle, tank battle. It's impossible to get back," I said. He looked, he said, "I suppose it is." Now he said, "I'll send a carrier for you. Stay there until tonight." I stayed there that night. No carrier came. A sniper started shooting at us. Tracer bullets. So we had to move from there. And as we moved, we were being shot at. And their battalion HQ had moved, and we were more or less lost in the darkness, you see. So we eventually saw some trucks coming up. We asked where they were going. Could they take us back to where we'd come from? So chap looked at us. Didn't know what to say. So we looked in the back of these trucks and they were full of dead men. They'd been up and picked up all these dead men from the front line. And stunk. Absolutely stunk. So we didn't have any luck in that direction, so we couldn't get on board. Eventually we got to Air B Ashlon, which had been behind the lines. And they got us together again. The sergeant major had been my sergeant major previously. And he got us all together. And he said, we just have to try and get back to C Company. They'd been out there all night. They dug trenches, deep trenches. They'd been shelled and they'd had a hell of a time of it, but one of the chaps had been shot through the head by a sniper. That was in the moonlight. And my old sergeant major got us all together and he tried to take us back up onto the hill where our unit was. And as we approached the hill, three Crusader tanks appeared. They tried to go up over this hill we were following. They all got hit. 88mm guns got them. They brewed up, said light. All three of them. So the old sergeant major said, it's impossible. He said, you can't get back. So we never did get back. Our unit, about half a dozen of them. They were still there. Anyway, we remained with B Echelon, and then the positions had altered a bit, and our chaps had made some progress in the front, on division, and various troops. And they became ready for a big push. I got a bit of shrapnel in my left hand, right in there. It turned poison.
It's got in the palm of your hand.
Yeah. So they made me go to an RAP, Regiment Laid Post, have it taken out, and I had my arm in a sling. No, I couldn't do anything. They put me on the lorry that carried all the battalion cooking utensils and all that sort of thing, the quartermaster's lorry. We all lined up across the desert for this charge, you see. There were tanks and guns and lorries and you name it, they were there right across the desert. We were about to make this charge and German planes came over and hit an oil tanker. We had an oil tanker with us. Killed one or two people. And I lay with a chap about a foot away from me, straight out on the sand, dust, whatever you like to call it. And this huge chunk of shrapnel landed between us. Huge piece, about like that.
About 18 inches.
Yeah, bomb, part of a bomb. And I looked at him and he looked at me. We were both all right. Anyway, just after that, they started this charge, supercharge they called it. We went right through the Germans, right through them, and turned off at the coast, a place called Galala. We saw German planes that had been shot down on the way. Some on an airfield that had been caught on the airfield with airplanes and shot them down. And the Italian tanks with their crew dead, burnt. Terrific battle, you know. As we stopped, we saw these Germans and Italians coming out from the pocket that they'd been in. You see, we cut them off from on the coast. They all came out and they were going to surrender, but it was one big bang, one shot from a gun, and it landed near us. Of course, we thought it was going to start all up again. It didn't. That was the last shot. We took all these prisoners. We had to guard them. And they had a lot of big tins, about a foot high and about a foot across, filled with red fish, the Italians. And that was a change from their ration. We helped them out with her. And wine. They had wine as well. Helped them out with that. And then we rounded them up for 2 or 3 days, and then we had transport come to pick them up, take them back to prisoner of war camps. And we were sent on to Merton Matru. We got to Merton Matru, and the weather was a bit dodgy. We were in trenches that other troops had used previously. And in the bottoms of those trenches, quite often, there was a bit of blanket sticking up. And we didn't know, but if you pulled the blanket up, you pulled a dead body up. They were buried in these trenches. They were deep trenches. And one day, we had an officer in the Essex Regiment, and he got moved. He got shifted to another unit somewhere. He was a nice chap. He took one of our chaps as his batman and went off with him to another regiment. We never knew what happened to him. But I met the chap he took with him afterwards, after the war. And he took him to the 1st Battalion of their unit, which was in the desert, 4th Indian Division they were in, 1st Battalion. And that's where he went, and he fought with them. And there was a rumour circulating that they'd opened a NAFI in Merton Matru. Well, we're opening them in NAFI in Merton Matru. Some of the chaps decided to try and find this NAFI, could get biscuits and cigarettes. If there was a NAFI, you see. You had mobile lorries before that, mobile NAFIs, you see. We'd get biscuits and cigarettes. They used to come up to the front line. Well, these chaps, we were issued with bivouacs. And some of these chaps had erected bivouacs, just one man bivouacs, over top of these trenches that we'd been in, you see. They went off to Merton Matru. Some of us were left behind. They'd left their blankets and everything in these trenches. And there was a terrific cloud burst. The sky just opened up. And we were on low ground. Of course, it all flooded. The trenches got full up. Blankets were all in the bottoms of the trenches. There was a huge pillbox on the perimeter of Merton Matru. We made for this pillbox. We got in there. tried to rescue some of the blankets, etc. All the ground was flooded. Fairly deep. You didn't know where you were walking, because if you weren't careful, you'd go down in one of these trenches, you see, full of water. Anyway, we made for this pillbox and we got in there. And the chaps that hadn't been to Mercer Matruh got in this pillbox. When the others came back, they found it all flooded and they came with us. And it became very cold. We were wet through. And it was very, very cold in that pillbox. I shall never forget it. And they issued us with a rum ration that night to warm us up. Never forget it. And then I had a message from Percy Webber. You met Percy Webber?
Yes.
I had a message from him. They wanted a runner in Company HQ. So I volunteered, because my HQ had been wiped out, Del Alamein. I volunteered to go to Company HQ. And
which company were you in at Alamein?
I was in C Company.
And which platoon?
14th platoon at first, and then I went to, as I say, to Company HQ. Met the Sergeant Major and he accepted me, and I was with Company HQ for the rest of the war.
How did that suit you?
Well, you didn't have to do guard duties. You had to run with messages. And we went back into Egypt, into the canal zone. We were guarding prisoners for some time. And then they took us to a place called Sidi Bish and Kassassin. And we were marching round the King's Palace, showing the flag, they called it. We got our own band. And the band was playing and we were marching round the King's Palace, because he was going to abscond. He'd made his plans to go over to the Axis if they captured Cairo. So he was under guard, more or less, you know. He couldn't get away. Well, he stayed at Sidi Bish for some time. But it was a terrible place to be, because sandflies were very prevalent there. And when you got warm at night, they used to bite you, make you itch, used to scratch like blazes, you know. Well, didn't matter what you'd done, sandflies were there. And of course, also flies as well, the ordinary flies. And I developed yellow jaundice. Several of the chaps developed yellow jaundice. Well, we thought it was yellow jaundice, turned us yellow. And every time we ate, we felt sick. Christmas was coming up, 1942. We were still there. And then he had the order that our 4th Battalion, who lost 600 men at El Alamein, was going to join what were left of the 5th and make it the 4th 5th Battalion, Royal Sussex Regiment, instead of the 5th. You see. That was at Sidi Bish, 1st of January 1943. They had a meeting at Cairo to discuss the situation. The brigade had been knocked about pretty badly. The 2nd Battalion was going to be turned into a parachute battalion. And the 4th Battalion was going to join what was left of the 5th to make the 4th 5th Battalion. The remnants were going to Pye Force, as the 2nd Battalion, and the 4th, 5th Battalion were going to Poi Force as well. And we started from City Bish on our way to Poi Force. It was a very long journey. We finished up in the hills of Persia, as it was then.